Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Robin Lundberg Show.
You want a little insight into my personality? My existence is really a constant battle between extreme confidence and deep-set insecurity.
Hey, thanks for letting me in. Got a good show going, man.
I'm here and ready to strike.
Robin, I gotta tell you, I've only been listening for about a month now, but I do love the show.
I wanna make sure I get all of your guys' opinions in before we get out of here, because you're as big a part... Well, actually, let me take that. That was today. You're a big part of the show. I was going to say you're as big a part of the show as I am. I'll give you 40%. 60% me, 40% you. But it wouldn't exist without you.
The Robin Lundberg Show is on the air.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show. And it's here with you, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time. Rocket can. Done some NBA free agency on the show, NBA offseason in general. And, of course, a lot of NFL, and I'm going to get to my NFL picks in just a moment. As, you know, it's not the most marquee schedule on the books, but the Taysom Hill thing has been the standout story, I believe. It's the storyline I think most people are curious about going in tomorrow, the most people have weighed in about as well on CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line. 855-212-4227. You know, as far as the rest of the schedule itself, I was talking about it before, but when you have the Cardinals and the Seahawks on Thursday night, that takes one off the board, right? Because that's a darn good game. It was a good game, too. On paper, it's a darn good game, and in reality, it was a darn good game as well. But the rest of the games this week are not quite up to the same level. The Chiefs and the Raiders might be the most marquee game, but it's tough when I don't know how many teams I think can actually compete with Kansas City. They're, to me, still the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl regardless of what happens with the Steelers and whether they go undefeated and all that. Anthony, what was my record on picks last week? I don't even remember.
You went 4-3 last week, so you are now 29-28 overall.
29-28. All right, so it's an important week. If I can keep that trend going and build back up a little cushion for myself, I'll be in business. All right, without further ado, let's get into this week's NFL picks.
He's crunched the numbers, used careful analysis, and is now ready to lay down the dough. Here's Robin Lundberg with his gridiron picks of the week.
All right, let's start with the Steelers. They're undefeated on the season thus far. Everybody knows that. They've got the Jaguars, which just feels like a win. Now, the Steelers did almost lose to the Cowboys a couple weeks ago. And you know, as good as the Steelers are, and I think, obviously, at this point, you have to consider them a legit Super Bowl contender. I don't believe they're a dominating team. They're not the kind of team that blows you away, right? They're just solid across the board. But Jacksonville stinks. So, as much as this line is a little bit too big for me, I'll still go with the Steelers minus 10 over the Jaguars. The Jaguars are 1-8 for a reason. They have no answer at quarterback. You know, they played the Packers tough. They've actually played a couple of tough games in a row against the Packers and the Texans. But I'll go with the trends over the course of the season. And the trends over the course of the season are that this is a bad team going up against a good one. and you know, I'm never I generally don't regret those picks. You know, go with the really good team against the really bad team, regardless of what the number is, because they're always extending that number up. Remember what the number was with the Chiefs and the Jets earlier this year? It was like 19.5. I think that the Chiefs wound up covering that too. So there it is. Patriots -2 over the Texans. That's another one for you. New England is sneakily, you know, still in the mix. I think they're too far behind, especially considering how well Buffalo and Miami have played, to probably get themselves back in there. There's a couple plays that New England's going to look back on and regret. That the end of that Seattle game, you know, they had a chance to win that one. And then the end of the game against Buffalo when Newton fumbled, they had a chance to win that one as well. And it's really, they might be just two plays away from all of us looking at their season markedly differently. Them's the breaks, right? That's the way it goes. Nonetheless, they've played better in recent weeks. Cam Newton specifically has played better since that. But he actually played pretty well in that Buffalo game. He just had the costly fumble, and he's played better since then. It looks like they've discovered a little bit of an offensive identity around him. And in Houston, I don't know what's going on with that team, with that franchise in general. It's just, it's starting to feel like, you know, other than Deshaun Watson, that's about as bad a situation as there is in the NFL. They lost to the Browns 10-7 last week. Ugh. Talk about a gross game. Can you imagine a grosser, when you just like, you don't even have to watch it. You see Browns beat the Texans 10-7. Yuck. The Texans did manage to beat the Jaguars a couple weeks ago by 2, but they're just having a miserable year, and I think New England is starting to trend in the right direction a little bit. So give me the Patriots -2 over the Texans. If I'm going to spend so much of the time of the show talking about Taysom Hill, might as well pick that game. I don't know if it's one I would have necessarily picked before that, but I like to mix in a little entertainment value as well. The Falcons' defense is porous. I'll take the Saints -3.5 over Atlanta. You know, New Orleans is a good team, period. Regardless of who the quarterback is, that's a good team. They showed it with Teddy Bridgewater last year, and he's not exactly setting the world on fire in Carolina this year. So they're able to win in multiple ways. They've got the offensive talent around Taysom Hill to help him succeed, and they're playing a team that sets it up for success. So basically, you know, any kind of quarterback I think that's put in there could do okay for them against Atlanta with that support system. So I'll take the Saints -3.5 over the Falcons. Give me the Dolphins -4 over the Broncos. The Dolphins are kind of just good. I mean, I think we're past the point of wondering that or how good is Miami. Miami's 6-3 with a +69 point differential. There's only a few teams in the league that have outscored their opponents on the season by more than Miami has. And, you know, Tua seems like he's getting his feet under him. He wasn't great in his first game as starter, but they were able to win it. And since then, he's gotten better and better every week. I mean, they were pretty good under Fitzpatrick, and they got that winning streak started under him, but it's continued under Tua, and you're now looking at a team that's reeled off 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 wins in a row. I don't know if I see that stopping against Denver, and to be honest, they got the Jets after that, and then the Bengals, so this may be something that goes on for a while. I'm starting to buy into the Miami Dolphins. It's not just a playoff team, but a contending team. Now, that ultimately is going to come down to how well Tua plays, how quickly Tua develops. But on a week-to-week basis, I got no problem taking Miami -4 over the Broncos. I'll take the Rams +4 over the Buccaneers. I mentioned this earlier in the show. There was a caller who called in and said that he thinks the Rams are going to go to the Super Bowl. And the Rams, you know, they have some special talent defensively. When you have Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, that is two players that are just tough to deal with. You know, DK Metcalf, who's been sensational this year, had real difficulties in that matchup with Jalen Ramsey. Russell Wilson had real difficulties in that game through two interceptions, no touchdowns, and he's lit up the scoreboard touchdown-wise this year. We know what Aaron Donald could do on the front. And Tom Brady is just, you know, this is the case for every quarterback, but I think especially for Tom Brady because of the way he plays and his lack of mobility. He is a vastly different quarterback when under pressure versus when not under pressure. And I think the Rams are the kind of team that could really pressure him. So I don't think this is a great matchup for Tom and Tampa. So I will take the Rams plus four over the Buccaneers this week. Then I will go with the Chiefs minus eight over the Raiders. You guys, if you've heard me do this segment before, I basically pick the Chiefs every week. You know, it usually works out for me. I think I lost on them last time they played, but that doesn't change my overall perception. When it's working out for you more often than it isn't, then you go with it. And that is the case in this case for me. I'm going to go with the Chiefs. The entire Raiders team is on like the COVID list as well. And I have Amy Trask coming up in just a few minutes. And I said something about the Raiders earlier in the show about how I kind of just don't know how they're good. And somebody had tweeted in, they were referencing the Raiders and how I shouldn't diss them. Let me find. Todd Lash said, put some respect on the Raiders' name. Did you not watch the first game? Amy Trask, you better teach him a thing or two about the silver and black when you come on the show. So Amy will explain to me why the Raiders are good. But as of right now, I think the Chiefs are a touchdown better. But here's a little fun fact. I think the Raiders beat the Chiefs by eight earlier in this season. The one loss that the Chiefs have this season. Do you know that's the most that Patrick Mahomes has ever lost as a starter? His biggest loss is 8 points. Isn't that crazy, Anthony? You know, we know he's great, but the worst loss he's ever taken is 8 points. Technically, still within one score.
He's pretty good, that guy.
like if you're going to beat him, ain't going to be by much. ain't going to be by much if you beat him. It's possible, but not by much. 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. Pradeep Prana tweets in, you forgot the great Muda, bro. As far as professional, look, I'm familiar. This is back to the Undertaker conversation and whether he has had the most iconic wrestling career. I mean, great Muda, definitely a character and a mask and all that stuff, but I don't think it's quite the same level as the Undertaker. 501 in the 503 says, who doesn't love Mean Mark? For those of you who aren't aware, there was a time where Mark Calloway, that's The Undertaker's real name, wrestled under the name Mean Mark.
And he teamed with Sid Vicious. They were the Skyscrapers.
Oh, my goodness. The Skyscrapers and the Natural Disasters, was that around the same time? I know it's different leagues, but the Natural Disasters, Earthquake and Typhoon.
Yep.
The Natural Disasters. Mike Larson, icon of pro wrestling, comes back to Ric Flair. Look, Ric Flair definitely was an icon, and he represented the territories and stuff. I remember my grandmother, who I referenced before, she had a Ric Flair toy back when I think it was NWA at the time. Of course, Ric Flair is a all-time great. He has an argument for being on Mount Rushmore. There's no question about that, on the Mount Rushmore of professional wrestling, which is always tough to do, because so does The Undertaker, and so does Stone Cold, I would say, so does The Rock, so does Hogan, so does, am I missing anybody?
Gotta give Cena some love.
Cena, yes, Cena, absolutely. And then the next guys would probably be Michaels, I think, Hart, Roman Reigns at this point is working his way into that conversation, to be honest. But those are the guys I think in the mix. I probably missed somebody, but those are the guys that are in the mix. But the reason I had made the point that The Undertaker, his career might be the most iconic, is because his entire career has encompassed wrestling. The Rock went on to other things. Austin got hurt, and that ended. You know, The Undertaker has been doing it for so long and has remained relevant and iconic the entire time. And his character is a little like, those guys did it so much on personality, he did it a lot on the character. And then I think it helped him tremendously. The streak, the WrestleMania streak, obviously. But I also think it helped him tremendously that he had some great matches in the mix there. Specifically, you know, the one against Shawn Michaels, and then I think later Triple H at WrestleMania. 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. I'll get Amy Trask to tell me why the Raiders are good and why I shouldn't be sleeping on them heading into this matchup with the Chiefs. To recap my NFL picks for the week, with Steelers minus 10 over the Jaguars, Patriots minus 2 over the Texans, Saints minus 3.5 over the Falcons, Dolphins minus 4 over the Broncos, Rams plus 4 over the Buccaneers, and Chiefs minus 8 over the Raiders. You can weigh in as well. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227, at Robin Lundberg on Twitter. It is the Robin Lundberg Show, and it's here with you on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show on CBS Sports Radio.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio, and I suppose it's better to be notorious than anonymous with someone who I would say is neither, just esteemed. I'm glad she could join me this morning. Is Amy Trask, CBS Sports NFL analyst, also of that other pregame show on CBS Sports Network. And Amy, first thing I want to say is thank you for joining me so early, California time. I know apparently you really want to rep California time.
I always love to rep California in whether it's time zone or otherwise. And thank you for having me. And yes, notorious is a good thing. Notorious B-I-G.
No doubt. Bed-Stuy Biggie. That's definitely a tall thing to live up to, and it stood the test of time. Now, I like to give the people what they want, both from the music selections and in requests online. So there was someone who wanted you to address something specifically. Todd Lash had tweeted in, "Put some respect on the Raiders' name to me. Did you not watch the first game?" He says, "Amy Trask, you better teach him a thing or two about the silver and black when you come on the show." And that was because I was saying that I think the Chiefs are going to win the game, and I said it with no disrespect, because I said I pick the Chiefs against every team that they play. It doesn't matter who they're playing. But when it comes to the Raiders, they are a little befuddling to me in the sense of I'm not sure why they're good, right? Like, I think John Gruden is owed an apology by a lot of people because he was mocked, and he's turned them around. And perhaps it's because they don't beat themselves. They control the clock. They can keep explosive offenses off the field. They've opened it up a little bit more offensively this year, throwing it with Carr, but they're still a running team. But when I look at them, where they rank statistically, there's nothing that just jumps off the page, offense, defense, or anywhere else. What is it that makes the Raiders where they are right now?
Well, I did see that tweet. I love that tweet. Thank you for that tweet, Todd. Look, statistics don't win games. So I understand the point you're making, and it's obviously, and I don't need to tell you this, a valid point about statistics, but at the end of the day, that's not wins a game. I look at the Raiders in two different regards. Offensively, very, very exciting right now for a few reasons. The pass protection is giving Derek Carr the time he needs to feel comfortable so he can relax a bit, doesn't get happy feet, has confidence. You've got incredible speed, and that speed zips up that field, and with the confidence he has behind the protection he's getting, he's having a lot of fun throwing a deep ball. So you've got a calm, confident quarterback with speed and a quarterback who can throw the deep ball. And oh, by the way, how about that running back and the running game? So offensively, things look good and I think may continue to get better. There have been question marks about the defense over the course of the season. The team was not doing a good job taking the ball away. fixed that a bit against Denver. Now, in fairness, part of that was Denver was very generous, you know, kind of like Oprah. You can have the ball and you can have the ball. But the team did get better in that regard. So if the defense can play continuously or continually, I should say, at that level, this team's very exciting and the schedule is very, very favorable for a playoff push.
You know what's interesting to me? Did you know this? The Raiders beat the Chiefs. They beat them by 8 earlier this year. You know, that's the most that Patrick Mahomes has lost by as a starter. And it screwed up my little pet thing I used to like to say is, like, he's never lost by more than a touchdown, and now it's like a technicality, a touchdown, and a two-point conversion. But what does that say? I mean, it's hard to say anything else about Mahomes and the Chiefs, but what does that say to you that's the biggest L he's taken since he took over in Kansas City?
It says so much about him. By the way, you can go ahead and say never more than a touchdown, because really a touchdown is 6 points. So whether you get the one or the two, I'm going to say go ahead and say never lost by more than a touchdown.
Okay.
But that 8 points. Now, by the way, that was the first time all year he's thrown an interception was in that game. And that was the first game the Chiefs lost since November 10th, 2019. So a lot of people are making a big whoop-de-doo about, you know, are the Chiefs going to be, and by the way, that's a very technical football word, whoop-de-doo, you know, are the Chiefs going to be seeking revenge for the victory lap the Raider team buses took around the stadium? I think the Chiefs are going to be more focused on having lost one game in a year to the Raiders and Patrick and having thrown one interception all season to the Raiders. So, you know, there's a lot at stake in this game. The Raiders haven't won the division since 2002. A win here would put the Raiders a game behind Kansas City and would make the Raiders undefeated in the division. So this is a very, very important game for both teams.
Robin Lundberg talking to Amy Trask, CBS Sports NFL analyst, also of that other pregame show on CBS Sports Network here on CBS Sports Radio. Now, Amy, I think the story that most people may be interested in this week, aside from the Sunday night game, is the quarterback situation in New Orleans, where it looks like Taysom Hill is going to get the start there. First, let me just get this part out of the way. Do you think this could be, because I've seen people speculate this, do you think this could in any way be like a smokescreen by Sean Payton to throw off the Falcons' game plan, or do you think this is a legitimate commitment to evaluating Hill?
I think both are possible. I think, you know, yes and yes. I think it's possible it's a smokescreen. I think it's a legitimate, it may be a legitimate chance for Hill. It may be any number of things. It may be a bunch of things altogether. But I know this, a lot of people are throwing a lot of shade at Sean Payton for this decision. He deserves the benefit of the doubt. He's a very, very good coach. So give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's see if it works out before rushing to any sort of judgment.
You know, I don't mean this in any way as a slight at Drew Brees, because obviously Drew Brees has accomplished what he's accomplished, and that can't be argued. But do you think there's any part of Sean Payton that's kind of sort of excited to get to try different packages and things that you just can't do with Brees because he's much more of a traditional quarterback that he can do with Taysom Hill? Maybe some things he's been scratching on the back of notebooks or whatnot that he actually can put into real live games now?
Well, knowing Sean as I do and knowing Coach as I do, what will excite them or him and what excites coaches is finding a way to win. So the answer is yes, I think you're spot on. I think very good coaches do get intrigued with the sorts of things you just talked about, and that is exciting for a coach to explore that and to figure out how to put that jigsaw puzzle together. But first and foremost, he's right now trying to figure out how to win this game.
When it comes to Hill yourself and your thoughts, I mean, to me, it's tough to evaluate. I mean, I've only seen him throw, he's thrown 18 passes, and I don't think I've seen all of them myself. But when you look at, you know, his mechanics, they're not exactly great or the things that stand out to you. But at the same time, the physical talent and overall ability is clearly there. Do you believe personally that this is somebody who could be a viable starting quarterback?
Yeah, I think you stated it beautifully. How the heck do we know? Yeah. You're right. He's got tremendous physical talent. But like you, I don't think we have enough data to draw any conclusions. And, you know, my nature is such that I won't rush to judgment. I don't draw conclusions without enough data. And I am excited to see how good he may or may not be able to be. We're not going to know that in a game. Well, you know, that's not something we can conclude, or it's not something I'm going to be willing to conclude after one game. But like you, I see the physical talent. I see the potential, but we just don't have enough data to know how good he can be.
And, you know, and don't you think there's a chance it actually looks better at first than it does over a long sample because, you know, teams are unprepared, they haven't seen him, and it's where the limitations would come into play in the long haul if he isn't able to develop more as a passer when teams do eventually, you know, figure out what New Orleans is doing with him behind center, if that makes sense?
It makes perfect sense. And again, I don't know how good he can or can't be, but I know you are absolutely right on that. Often you see someone just burst out and do phenomenally well. And then teams see, and I still call it film because back in the day when I started my career in the league, we called it film. So yes, kids, I know it's not actually film anymore. But when coaches look at what I will still call the film, they start figuring people out. And that's not unique to Taysom. We see that all the time. You know, look, a quarterback can go down in a game. You put in the next guy. The team hasn't seen anything on film. But if that guy's going to start the next week, teams now have a game and they learn as they go. So I think your observation is tremendous.
Robin Lundberg talking to Amy Trask, CBS Sports NFL analyst, also of that other pregame show on CBS Sports Network here on CBS Sports Radio. One other game I want to ask you about quickly, Amy, and that's the Monday night game, the Rams and the Buccaneers. To me, this is not a great matchup for Tampa simply because, you know, every quarterback is worse under pressure, but I think Tom Brady in particular, because of just his playing style, lack of mobility and everything, pressure affects him to a large degree, and when he's not touched, he's amazing, and when you get a little pressure up the middle, that's, you know, sort of the kryptonite, if you will, and the Rams have done a good job against opposing quarterbacks. I think they forced Russell Wilson into his worst game a couple weeks ago. When you have Aaron Donald, when you have Jalen Ramsey, that's a tough combination to deal with. Do you think the Rams are a tough matchup specifically for the Buccaneers?
Well, I think the Rams are a tough matchup for anyone for the exact reasons you just said. And I'm smiling ear to ear as I say this, so everybody please know it's said in good spirit and good sportsmanship. In addition to everything you said about Tom not performing well when he's getting hit, Tom does not like to get hit. Now, look, no quarterback likes getting hit. But we've all seen Tom when he gets hit. He jumps up and he looks at the official like, "You just let them do that to me? Why did you let them do that to me?" Tom does not like getting hit, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this matchup goes. There has been some chitter-chatter that Aaron Donald's not 100%. I'm looking forward to seeing that matchup, and I hope Aaron does play and plays at 100%.
Have you ever seen that, like, flinch reflex that Brady does after he's been hit a few times where he almost, like, there's a ghost coming after him?
I don't consider it a flinch. You know, I'd have to go back and look to see if I agree with you that it's a flinch. I think of it as a, "You just let him do what to me?" reflex. Like, wait, you know I'm Tom Brady, right? You're going to let him hit me?
Yeah, look, it's hard to, you know, say argue with Tom Brady, especially with the
it
success
sure is.
He's already had in Tampa away from New England. Amy, really appreciate your time and you joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Following Robin Lundberg on Twitter is easy. His Twitter handle is at Robin Lundberg.
And if you missed any portion of the show, you could grab the podcast. It's on Apple, CBSSportsRadio.com, radio.com as well. Just look for my name and my face. If you want to get in before I hand it off to Ken Carmen, you can at 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227 at Robin Lundberg on Twitter, RobinLundberg. I want to give a shout out to another host on this station as well, Zach Gelb, who's got looks like a viral tweet going on via the CBS Sports Radio account, and it's on Giannis Antetokounmpo, and he's sort of sticking up for Milwaukee and small market teams. In the clip, do you happen to have that audio, Anthony, by any chance? I know I should have prepped you on that. I just saw it. All right. Well, I'm on tomorrow morning. I'll grab some for you. You can play it for you. But you can check it out. It's from just go to CBS Sports Radio on Twitter. Just wanted to give Zach a shout out on that because it's always cool when it's happened. And, you know, I always like it when it happens for me. And I'm guessing the reason this blew up is because Bucks fans rallied around it, you know, and they, the premise of what he was saying is that the tampering stuff in the NBA is so selective, and that LeBron obviously was manipulating the Anthony Davis situation for a long time. And then how did the Paul George, Kawhi Leonard stuff all happen all at once if it wasn't pre-coordinated? So why would the NBA go after the Bucks for the Bogdanovich deal? And I think there's a sentiment out there that small market teams don't matter, and teams and loyalty don't matter, and super teams are the wave, and that even the NBA wants that to be the wave. So it's the kind of thing that probably struck a chord with that specific listenership, that specific base in Milwaukee, who's like, yeah, that's right. You know, why is everybody trying to move Giannis off our team? Can we have Giannis, please? Let us keep Giannis. Can he sign the Supermax? You know, and I bet you that was a energy that was captured by that. 855-212-4227. All right, time for me to get to everything I have not as of yet in another one.
It's time for another edition of Another One on the Robin Lundberg Show. The rumors, reports, and ridiculous from the week that was. Here's Robin Lundberg.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio, and I'm going to get to these topics that I haven't covered on the show as of yet right now. Anthony, what's up first?
All right, we started the show talking NBA free agency, so we'll start there. So Rajon Rondo expected to receive a significant offer from the Hawks, $15 million for 2 years guaranteed, but apparently Rondo remains focused on potentially joining the Clippers. Would the addition of Rondo be enough for the Clippers to win a championship?
Look, I think the Clippers are, their problems go beyond that. I think they do need a ball handler and a distributor and another point guard, and Rondo has proven that for any ability that lacks, any shooting, you know, people lagging off, when it comes to the bright lights being on, he's going to show up. So I think in that case, it helps. And maybe even from a leadership standpoint, it helps. But one of the problems, I think, is that the Clippers didn't have their identity because, you know, Paul George is not wired to be the leader. And Kawhi Leonard, who's their best player, is not wired to be a leader. In Toronto, they had that support system around. They had Kyle Lowry, who was the leader of that team. They had Gasol, you know, Ibaka, vet, a whole bunch of guys that are wired that way and are bring that kind of attitude, and I don't think the Clippers have that. In addition to, you know, they need a lead guard. So while I think it helps, I think Rondo is past being the point where he's the difference maker. He's more the thing that can kind of put you over the top, as we saw in LA when he started playing well off the bench. It really, you know, in those games they couldn't lose. But I, you know, you also see the Lakers moving on without Rondo this year. I don't think they're too worried about that shift. What's next?
Another one.
Gordon Hayward surprisingly opted out of his $34 million player option, allowing him to become an unrestricted free agent. How much is Hayward worth at this point?
It doesn't feel like that much. What's going on in Boston? That's what I want. Every year it seems like somebody wants out of Boston, which is odd considering they've been a very good team, right? They seem to be a pretty well-run team. They got a good coach. I don't know. It's a little strange how that keeps happening with the Boston Celtics, but clearly Hayward wants probably the ball a little bit more again. He probably wants an expanded role. Ever since he got hurt, he never really worked his way back into that roster. Exactly right. He's played a little bit better as of late. He played a little bit better last year, obviously. But he's no longer a star-level player, I don't believe, personally. And, you know, he's not quite quick enough on his feet, I think, either offensively or defensively. Guy has good court vision, solid shooter, and everything like that. Good passer and playmaker for his size. But I don't know who would pay him what he just opted out of. And I honestly don't know if he's much of a difference maker. It looks like Indiana wants to add him. And that's number one on his list. And then, you know, you never would rule out the Knicks in these situations. Whenever there's like a guy, they're like, who's going to pay him that? Well, maybe the Knicks. I don't know. But it does seem like he's not long for Boston, but that decision had to be made for more than just financial reasons, unless he's looking for the long-term commitment, because I can't foresee him getting more than $34 million next year. What's next?
Another one.
The 2020 NBA draft featured zero lottery picks from Kentucky, UNC, Duke, and Kansas. This was the first time Kansas, Kentucky, North Carolina, or Duke did not have a player drafted in the lottery since 2000. Now, those schools did have first-round picks. Anthony Cole went to the Magic at 15, so he just missed the cutoff. Tyrese Maxey from Kentucky went six picks later to the 76ers. But is it a bad sign for college basketball that the Blue Bloods were shut out of the lottery? Do you think it says anything about the current state of college hoops?
I think so many things were an anomaly this past year. It's hard to make any definitive judgment. I mean, there was no NCAA tournament for guys to get showcased. But there is a shift happening, clearly, right? I mean, how many guys have we seen now choose the G League? Jalen Green, notably, you know, has decided to go to the G League. How many guys did we see, or are we starting to see, play overseas? I mean, LaMelo Ball is an example there. He was the third pick in the draft. And then this was also just a year where there wasn't a huge top prospect, and the top prospects that go to college tend to go there. But when there, you know, there aren't any, then that's going to just lessen naturally the picks that come from those schools. I mean, I'm looking at a picture of Anthony Davis right now as I'm scrolling through free agency news. Obviously, he's out of Kentucky, so I wouldn't rule out Kentucky and Duke. Zion just came from Duke last year, right? I would say. There's a big in-between area here where clearly there's a shift in the athletic process when it comes to basketball development, where there are more options, whether it's overseas or the G League. But at the same time, I think this year there just being none out of those blue bloods, as you put it, is also a bit of an anomaly. What's next?
Another one.
Say it ain't so, Robinson Cano. Cano tested positive again for performance-enhancing drugs. The Mets second baseman suspended for the entire 2021 season because he's a second-time offender and will forfeit his $24 million salary for the season. Cano previously tested positive in 2018 when he was suspended for 80 games. What does this latest suspension mean for Cano's legacy?
It almost erases it. I mean, now there's always a difference between whether you were, you know, the cheating put you over the top, or the cheating was the reason for your success. And when you continue to do it after you were already in trouble, a lot of people are just going to assume that means you needed it to be the player that you were. And in Robinson Cano's case, I don't know if that's true. I mean, he was always a super talented guy. I loved watching him when he was on the Yankees in his prime. Obviously, got the big deal from Seattle because of that. And I can't say specifically that he was a product of the cheating or the PEDs. But when you're so reliant on it that either you've convinced yourself that, or you're just looking for an edge, or maybe at this case, it could just be freak timing where he used earlier and then he used again to keep himself around because he saw his career ending, and that could be the reason. Nevertheless, when people see you as a repeat offender, they're going to you know, kind of look at your accomplishments a little sideways, and I think that's clearly the case with Robinson Cano. What's next?
Another one.
Conor McGregor returning to the octagon. He's going to fight Dustin Poirier in the main event of UFC 257 on January 23rd. You excited that McGregor is back?
Yes and no. I mean, look, I'll leave with the no. Conor McGregor's done enough away from the octagon now where you wonder, like, does he really deserve to be out there? Like, and at some point, you know, just because it's mixed martial arts and it's a combat sport and there are different standards, at some point is it like, all right, no. Not dealing with this guy. And then there's the other part, which is yes, where he's just entertaining character, even if objectively he's done some terrible things and maybe doesn't deserve to be out there. There is a certain charisma that lends itself to that, and obviously there's an interest level and you know, desire for people to watch him. I mean, he keeps getting the opportunities because he's box office. So I myself am torn on it because there's a part of me that doesn't want to support him, but then there is a part of me that's more interested in him than other guys. And therein is the Conor McGregor dilemma. What's next?
Another one.
All right, and finally, Nintendo Wii celebrated its 14th anniversary on Thursday. Definitely helped pave the way for the Nintendo Switch, which has been very successful. And then last week we had the release of PlayStation 5. So what is your all-time favorite video game console?
Original Nintendo, I would say. For me, that's probably the one I got the most joy out of. I was never a huge gamer myself, and as they got more advanced, therefore that, you know, I didn't quite go along. But I loved some Nintendo and blowing in those cartridges and playing Mike Tyson's Punch-Out and Mario Brothers. And I would also vouch for the Nintendo Switch, which is a heck of a device. My son Raj, who I'm, you know, looking at right now, he got one for Christmas last year and he was so excited. And I've played a lot of Nintendo Switch with him. Mostly, what did we play the most? Marvel Ultimate Alliance at first. We beat that game together. We've played a bunch of NBA 2K and a bunch of WWE 2K as of late, not to mention some classic Mario Kart and Super Smash Brothers. And it's a cool device, the way it can be a at-home console and an on-the-go console. Because if you remember, Game Boy was a big thing in its day, and a Nintendo Switch is an advanced Game Boy and an advanced Nintendo at the same time. So I guess I would vouch for Nintendo overall. When I'm making that case, though, my gamer friends are big into PlayStation. I'll be back actually tomorrow morning. I'm in tomorrow morning, 6 to 10 Eastern, here on CBS Sports Radio, and then back normally, as I am every week on Saturday, next Saturday. 855-212-4227. If you want to stick around for Ken Carmen, you should. And you can also grab the Robin Lundberg Show podcast if you missed any portion of today's show. It's been the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.